Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Welcome to a postmortem edition of Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you to wrap up the season. Phil, I really wish we had more weekly podcasts to go, but this is going to be our last weekly podcast for a little while.
You know, based on the way the season ended, thank God. I'm ready to not talk about this team every week for a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be nice to have a break, but you know, we're going to get into what the hell happened against Murray State. Was it inevitable? And I think an interesting thing to talk about is, was this season a disappointment? It seems like a lot of you on the Twitter sphere are on opposite sides of that. We'll talk about Wojo and maybe tease a little something we're going to be doing over the summer towards the end of the pod. But Phil, actually, before we did anything, instead of doing this at the very end, I did want to say thanks to everyone who listens to this podcast every week and tunes in with us and gives us feedback on Twitter or on cracksidewalks.com. We wouldn't do this thing every week if we didn't feel like anybody was listening. So first and foremost, just thanks everybody for just being with us all season and humoring us and listening to our takes and giving us yours as well.
Yeah, it's great to get the interaction. Nothing more enjoyable on a work day than getting into a Twitter fight with somebody, and I use quotes around fight, but getting into a Twitter discussion with a group of people I really don't know on Twitter about basketball because of something I said on a podcast. It's fascinating and scary and super, super fun. So I appreciate everyone's engagement.
We enjoy it. And as long as you guys enjoy it, and as long as we have time to do it, we plan on keeping the podcast going. But let's do the not-so-fun part, talking about losses, and in this case, a season-ending loss. And boy, did things come crashing down against Murray State.
Boy,
your Marquette Golden Eagles not only were eliminated for the tournament, but were fired into the sun by Murray State, 83-64. It was just one of those games that early in the second half, you just felt like they were not in it, they were not going to be in it, and the season definitely had to end. Phil, as we got to this, I don't know about you, but as we got to the second half of the Murray State game, I was like, let's just end it. Like, the season's over. This team's got nothing left, which is such a disappointment considering where they were less than a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, with 10 minutes to go in the second half, I was seriously considering that we should rest Marcus so that he's fresh for next season. Like put him on the bench because it wasn't doing any good. And the first half wasn't great, right? I mean, Marquette was down but they were at least competitive until the last minute of the first half when things went a little sideways on them. But the second half, like, I don't know if Murray State just adjusted the crap out of the game and Wojo kind of did nothing because he didn't adjust. I'll say that much, because the defensive approach was the exact same in the second half as the first half. Side note, garbage in my opinion. But yeah, that second half, it was just like, 10 minutes in, done. Let's get out of here. There's no sense in wasting our time anymore.
Yeah, Marquette's going to be all over One Shining Moment for all the wrong reasons. So when they mix
poor Joey Hauser.
Poor Joey Hauser. He's going to be that. They might show two angles of that. So yeah, he's on a Ja Morant poster for the rest of his life. That's just the way that goes. But yeah, Ja Morant happened, and that was a fear we had when we were talking about the pod last week, Phil. Is when you go against an NBA player, a guy who may be going as high as two in this summer's NBA draft, the elite guards that Marquette has faced have done pretty well. And boy, did he. And there was just no answer. I don't know what the answer was, but Wojo and Marquette didn't have it. Because, when they doubled Ja Morant, he would find the open man with ease, and they would get easy layups. If they tried to take him one-on-one, he would just blow by his man and get to the basket. Ja Morant just did absolutely anything he wanted, and he also got double-digit rebounds. It was, I had to, salute the guy a little bit, because it was just a masterful performance, and everyone was gushing over him, and I can't blame him. I kind of was too, but it was just frustrating to see him just pick apart Marquette play after play. And it seemed to me in the second half, when Marquette's shots stopped falling, it just got worse with each passing possession because John Morant would go down the floor, do whatever he wanted, whether it's find an open man or hit a shot, and then Marquette would go down the other side, rush a shot, miss it, and then rinse and repeat for, you know, 10 minutes, and then the game was way out of hand.
Yeah, well, the only way Marquette's defense was getting any traction was if they got back. Like, you know, so the offense had to score, or it had to be a live ball, or it had to be a turnover that where the ball was out of bounds so the defense could get back and get set. Because any transition plays, Murray State was just smoking Marquette back. And Marquette's transition D was garbage. And yeah, just everything, there was no adjustments, and everything Marquette did, John Morant just did the opposite, or, you know, basically had the kryptonite for the defense, for the Marquette defense, and was able to pick them apart. You know, this must have been what the Kentucky fans felt like during D Wade's triple double in 2003 on the way to the Final Four. So I sympathize with them because this felt terrible. But yeah, you do have to tip the cap to Ja Morant because he was just amazing in that game. I, like, you know, when I had given up on the team with 10 minutes to go in the game, I was actively rooting for him. I wanted that triple double because I just wanted to see it.
And who knows? Maybe like years down the road, if Ja Morant is going to NBA All-Star games or, you know, be like an MVP of the league, we'll always say, yeah, that guy tore us a new one in the tournament one time. That sucked.
Yeah.
You know, I hope he has a good NBA career because he is pretty awesome. But from the Marquette perspective, you know, I just don't know what else to say except the collapse of the regular season just carried over into the postseason. Yeah, they got one win in the Big East tournament against St. John's, but this team just looked out of gas for weeks. And the team was so heavily dependent on Marcus doing well. And when he was average, everything else kind of came crashing down. And when you weren't getting contributions from other guys on the floor, you know, it's, you know, if you're not getting anything from Sakar and you're not getting much from the Housers or the bench, there's just not enough point. You know, Marcus can't score 50 every night and bail you out of everything. And just, I mean, it's on really the whole team. I can't say really any one guy was trying to claw them out of this thing because it just seemed like the whole team was tired and kind of ready to shut it down.
Yeah, you know, and we had a discussion last podcast around is Marcus hurt or tired? I mean, quite frankly, it's probably both, right? But, I mean, there was some Twitter discussion back and forth about, you know, basically since Marcus started to get nicked up, and like you said, he was average Marcus, not great Marcus, Marquette's offense has kind of gone to crap. And I think it's largely because plan A was, let's see if we get an open shot early in the shot clock. And then if we don't, Marcus is the bailout. And then he just, he couldn't keep taking the punishment, driving to the lane. And then as he started to get tired and or injured, you know, his shot from three was just not as strong. He was leaving it short. So the offense became stagnant, and that led to a bunch of runouts that Murray State was able to exploit. So, you know, quite frankly, just we, again, you had to pull this lever, but it bears repeating. You know, Woja went all in on Marcus is the only point guard because, quite frankly, the Chartouni era did not pan out nearly the way we thought it would. So they were all in on Marcus playing max minutes, and it got them to where they got. But when they got there, they didn't have anything left to do anything with it, right? So that was really – I think that's partially what the season boils down to is they
– Yeah, and that's something that, you know, some of the critics of Marquette – or maybe not critics, but those who were, you know, given kind of both sides of the analysis of Marquette earlier in the season say, well, a concern is they only have one ball handler, and that did kind of catch up with them. Because Marcus can't handle the ball all the time because he is not immune from turnovers. And when he is the only guy who can handle the ball, that can get a little worse because they're just going to double him and force him to make mistakes. And they know they can probably rip the ball away from just about everybody else. And, you know, it was, what was it, the Butler game where Marcus had that awkward fall that looks like he may have had a slight leg injury of some sort, like a
Yeah, it was at the end of the Butler game at Fiserv Forum, where he kind of looked like he tweaked his groin or his hamstring or something.
Yeah, and maybe that was a lingering thing. You know, Marcus says it wanted to make excuses. You know, he never said his wrist was going to be an issue. But you got to wonder if that had an effect on his legs later in the season, and maybe that's why his shot wasn't falling quite as much if he didn't have his – if his legs weren't 100% healthy. If that thing was still bothering him a little bit, just throws off his rhythm. And when you're a shooter and you can't have rhythm, that's going to affect you. So maybe that caused his drop off a little bit. But again, I think, as you touched on, Phil, having only one guy who can handle the ball, you know, I think teams had Marquette figured out at that point, especially as we got late in the season. Say, look, we're just going to really crank up the pressure on Marcus. And if he doesn't turn the ball over when he gives the ball up, somebody else probably will. And they were able to fit a lot of opponents were a lot of able to force Marquette into a lot of mistakes late in the season, and that's why Marquette was able to win the effective field goal percentage battle in some games, but still lose the game because they turned the ball over so much.
Yeah, well, and you know, and there's a difference between like bringing the ball up. You know, because obviously Joey and Sam and Sakar and Marcus were all able to bring the ball up the court. But the real problem was that Marcus was the only one that could really initiate kind of a motion offense, right? Like turn the corner and get into the lane. So offensively, it was Marcus kind of initiating a drive into the lane with the kickouts, or it was, you know, high post action to the Hauser brothers, or an occasional dump down into the low post in Theo or Ed. And that was by and large the offense, right? You know, Sakar had some games where he was effective, and then other games where he just, you know, quite frankly, the Murray State game was probably one of his most ineffective games I've seen him play all season.
Yeah, 0 points over 0-3 from three. Yeah, it was.
And essentially got benched. He essentially got benched in the Ja Morant assignment, and that went to Brendan Bailey, who did, you know, not a great job, but certainly a better job in defending him. I don't know that anyone could have defended him the way he was playing, but yeah, the offense just got one dimensional. There is not enough. I don't know if you call it athleticism or speed or what it is, but there just was not enough going to the basket type action that we needed to, you know, draw fouls or get other teams into foul trouble or kind of, you know, cause the defense to suck in and let our defender, our 3-point shooters take advantage. So it was not great. Not great offense. I think the overall concern, and we'll maybe get to it a little bit later, the concern I have is how much of the season when we thought we were great is smoke and mirrors because the opposition was not good. You know, so is this a good team? Are we going to be better next year? I don't know. It's going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, maybe let's get into that a little bit, because every Big East team is out of the tournament, most of them spectacularly so. You know, Villanova got at least one win. But, you know, they got blown out in the next round by Purdue, and both Marquette and Seton Hall went down pretty hard. And, you know, St. John's went out in the first four. Maybe it shouldn't have even been in the tournament to begin with. But, yeah, that is maybe a bit of a concern, is that, yeah, Marquette had a better record this year, but maybe they feasted on a weaker Big East. We all knew the Big East was weaker. So did Marquette get better and everybody else just get a little worse, and Marquette was able to benefit that way? I mean, watching the team game in and game out, I would like to think the team is a little better than it was last year, because we did see progression from guys like Theo John, especially. Sakar had some really nice games. Sam and Marcus were pretty much the same guys, and that's not a bad thing, because they were both really good last year, too.
Well, but I do think we should call – Sam was – especially on the defensive end, Sam was better, and I think some of that's a function of playing on on two healthy hips as opposed to one.
Sure.
But yeah, I thought Sam was, especially defensively, was better. But yeah, I agree. It's there was a number of players you can point to that say, especially Sakar. I mean, when did he become a 3-point shooter? But you know, individually they were better, but as a team, collectively, were they better?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly enjoyed watching this team start to finish more than I enjoyed watching last year's team.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Like, collectively, it seems better. But I guess this is leading up to a little bit for me is I'm still not convinced Wojo is a good coach. I mean, I definitely think he's got high attributes, right? I think player development, that's clearly shown. I think he's a solid recruiter. You know, I think his out of timeout coaching is good. But I look at, let's take the Murray State as a prime example. Defensively, like, that was just a mind-boggling game plan, and the fact that he stuck with it for 35 minutes in that game, you know, the only change he made was go to Brendan Bailey, which helped a little bit, but like, it was this soft double on Ja. They decided to go over screens on Ja Morant instead of going under. Like, I would have much rather have lived with, if Morant wanted to jack up a bunch of threes because we went under screens, I'd much rather that than the wide open easy looks he was, you know, I shouldn't say easy because those were some highlight reel assists he made, but like, we were just given all the angles and over helping and going over screen. Like, and it was just a bad, to my eyes, it was a bad game plan. And I just that in a microcosm worries me about this is Wojo a good coach? We're back where we were at the end of last season. Is he a good coach?
I feel like that's exactly where we were talking about this time a year ago. It's like, well, we've had plenty of excuses. We've had, you know, guys leaving the program. We've had the team was very young. We've had we have nobody to replace Henry Ellenson. You know, all kinds of excuses. All right, but next year is going to be the year. We're going to know something next year. And speaking of the 2018-19 season. And now here we are at the end of 18-19, and I'm kind of still in the same spot. I was not blown away one way or the other. I think this is something we touched on earlier in the season is it seems like Wojo will always kind of be right in the middle. He'll never get to the point where everyone thinks he should be fired, and he'll never get to the point where everybody thinks he's great. He does just enough to stay kind of right in the middle where people just really aren't sure. Like the people who don't like him and have never liked him, like he's really never done enough to get them on board. And the people who really believe in him and really want him to do well, like he's never done so bad to convince them, well, maybe this isn't the right mix here. Because, you know, I've decided that I think Wojo, whatever the expectations are, have been with this team every year. He's kind of hit them like right on it. He's never really overachieved in any season at Marquette. Like in Office Space, if it's five pieces of flair, he's going to wear five pieces of flair.
Right.
He's not going to get you six.
So he's basically my career goals, which is to dwell in mediocrity. Not so good that they ask you to do more stuff. Not so bad that they fire you. Just sit in the middle where you can cash a paycheck and move on at the end of the day.
I don't think he does that intentionally, but I think that's what the results are.
Right.
Speaking of the expectations with this year, the tough thing is if you go by the preseason expectations, yeah, hit them almost dead on. You know, we talked about this before the Big East tournament. What were the preseason expectations? Average prediction was about 23.5 and 7.5, so about 24 wins and 8 losses. That's almost exactly where they were. Most of us predicted a second-place Big East finish. That's where they were. Most of us projected averaged out about a 5-seed projection in the tournament. That's what they were. I think the problem was we adjusted expectations mid-season, all of us.
Right. Podcasters, it's a living writers, document, right?
Yeah, you know, when you reach, yeah, while those were the preseason expectations, when you're top 10 in the country, you're 12-2 in the conference, and you're a win away from winning an outright conference title and have a road to a 2-seed, you raise the expectations. And I'm speaking us, the players, the coaches, everybody wanted that Big East championship. Everybody wanted to get a 2 or 3 seed in the tournament. Everybody wanted to try to get to the Sweet 16. But when none of that happens, when you would, like I said, we all kind of adjusted our expectations late January, early February, and then it all came crashing down, and we kind of averaged out and finished exactly where we expected this team to be. So that's the difficulty for me calling this a successful season or a great season, because compared to what I thought at the beginning of the season, yeah, he hit it like right on the nose. But when I saw this team at its best, I wanted a little more, and they didn't get there, and that was the real bummer for me. So circling back to this discussion on Wojo, is he a good coach? Is he a bad coach? At times, both. It seems like sometimes he's really got it rolling, and sometimes not so much, and it really falls apart, and he, for whatever reason, he's not able to right the ship, especially whether it's mid-season or mid-game, the adjustments aren't there, and we're just going to have to ride this thing out as it was. Like last year, the obvious issue was, well, they can't play Rousey and Howard together. It just doesn't work. But he was kind of, at last year was kind of like, well, this is what we're going to ride or die with, because like the games we've won, it has worked. Similar to this year with Marcus's usage being so high, that worked for 75% of the season. And at the end of the year, all of a sudden it didn't. But that's what we were going to ride or die with, and that's eventually what we died with. Not that it was all on Marcus necessarily, but as he was human, no one else was able to pick up the slack and make the team, you know, able to compensate for what maybe have been lacking a little bit in Marcus's performance. Is Rojo a good coach? I don't know. I still don't know. And I don't know what expectations I want to set next year to help me convince myself. I just think with me evaluating Wojo, he's always going to be just okay. I don't know if I'll ever consider him an elite coach. I don't know if I'll ever consider him a terrible coach. I may just always consider him a coach.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I mean, and you hate to make the excuses, but as I sit and think about it, there's probably two key factors here that really, you know, we don't think about it, but that probably kind of doomed us, if you will, to exactly what happened. One is probably Wojo's fault, and one is obviously not really his fault, but when you look at it, the fact that the recruiting miss, if you will, or the talent evaluation of Chartouni, you know, that he was not brought in. I cannot believe he was brought in to average 8 minutes a game and four turnovers. One.
We got fooled by his stats in the, what is 40 of you play in the A-10?
Yeah.
Like his stats in that league were a bit of a mirage. And honestly, a friend of mine, his dad went to Fordham. I don't know if I even mentioned this on the podcast, but he was asking, like, my buddy Steve, he said, you know, what are we getting with the Chartouni? He's like, he sure does get a lot of steals. And his dad said, well, you know, we do play that kind of – Fordham played that a press defense, kind of like a 40 minutes of hell kind of defense. So in that kind of defense, you're going to get a lot of steals. So maybe his – defensive numbers were a bit of a mirage coming out of, and plus he's just stepping up talent wise. Even in a down year for the Big East is a great year in the A-10.
Yeah, but he just looks slow, right? Like everything, he looks slow, and for a point guard, he had a terrible handle because he just turned the ball over. So you know, and that's on Wojo, right? Like that was a Wojo recruit. The other one that really hurt was Greg Elliott's thumb injury. I gotta believe, and again, you can debate whether the red shirt was the right call or not. Ultimately, it's Greg's decision, and I support it. But you know, if you either have Greg if he never breaks the thumb and you have him for the full season, or if he comes back at conference play, there is no way Marcus is averaging 36 minutes a game.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing you can't control. Cause, if Greg never gets hurt, I would venture to say Joe Chartouni may not play at all in Big East play.
Right.
he may have just been, you know, riding the bench, like had about as many minutes as Matt Helt did this season. Or maybe closer to the walk-ons, honestly. So that's something that's kind of out of your control. But as good as Greg Elliott is, you know, losing the, you know, seventh or eighth guy on your bench – or seventh, eighth guy in your rotation shouldn't really wreck your season. So Wojo was able, the team was never able to compensate for that as far as having an extra ball handler. So, yeah, one thing maybe was within Wojo's control and the other probably wasn't.
It definitely wasn't. But the point remains, like, and that's where I, you know, because again, on Twitter, I've calmed down a little bit since Thursday afternoon. But
so we never pod angry. We always try to let it breathe a little bit.
Right. Two rules we generally follow. Don't pod angry and don't pod drunk. Podding is okay, but drunk podding is not. But like I was ready to you know, give Wojo his walking papers after the game, because I was admittedly in a dark place from a fandom perspective, because I'm like, if it was a down Big East and this, you know, and theoretically our best team in like 6 years, and this is what the result we got, like, how are we ever going to be good again? You know, I think next year is the prove it year, right? Because all the really good players are back. They're a year older, year more experienced. We saw the improvement from Sakar and Theo and Marcus and Sam. You know, so theoretically that improvement should continue. We'll have Greg Elliott back. All of a sudden, Kobe McCune's going to be available as another ball handler. So that should be on paper, that should be our best team in the last 6 or 7 years. The question is, the Big East is going to be better too. And Wojo is still going to be there. Is next year going to be more of the same? Is it going to be incrementally better? Is it going to meet whatever just good enough expectations we set? That's the struggle. That's the dark place I'm in right now.
Yeah. You had a lot there that I want to touch on before we start talking about next year. But, yeah, I mean, after the game, the Fire Wojo crowd on Twitter was, boy, they came out in full force after that game. Wojo even deleted his Twitter account because he was so tired of it, by the way.
I did see something on Twitter that, and I don't buy this for a damn minute, but supposedly Wojo always planned to delete his Twitter after the season, that he doesn't keep it active after the season. And I'm like, I'd have to go back and look. You know, I don't keep track of his account stats, but I don't buy it.
Almost every college coach has a Twitter account, and I can tell you that is a great way to communicate with recruits, especially the ones that you can't officially text or call yet, just to DM them. A lot of recruiting happens on Twitter. Now, it necessarily doesn't need a Twitter necessarily to recruit at a high level, but it helps. So, like, almost every major college coach in every sport has a Twitter account, even if it's all they do, even if it's just a way to DM recruits. But yeah, I did, you know, I will say this though, if you're the type of person who, when you're angry on Twitter, at the coaches and especially at the players, maybe take a breath. You know, like, when you're upset on Twitter and you want to at the players, definitely stop. Adding the coach, maybe a little more forgivable, but still also probably a little annoying. But that being said, Wojo should probably never read the mentions if he's going to have a Twitter account. If he ever decides to change his mind and have a Twitter account again, just don't read the mentions. Unless you're on like a 20-game winning streak and on the way to Sweet 16, then yeah, maybe read the mentions. You might enjoy that. But other than that, stay out of the mentions, just stay in the DMs, and, you know, talk to future recruits that way, and that's really all you really need a Twitter account for. And that, and the occasional PR tweet that somebody can tweet for you, like, congratulations to our, you know, golf team on winning a Big East championship, you know, something like that. All the coaches who have Twitter accounts have something like that, that always, again, kind of a PR thing that somebody does for them. But I just found that odd that Wojo deleted his Twitter account, but, you know, right after the end of a very disappointing season, or disappointing end to the season.
Well, how many head coaches do we think actually manage their own Twitter accounts? Like, I mean,
I think as far as like the day-to-day things of like congratulating like the women's team on a big win, like that's nothing. Like, they don't even manage it. But as far as using that, the Twitter account, to communicate kind of like in private with recruits, I would say they use that quite a bit.
Do you think Wojo has a Kevin Durant like burner account that he uses?
Maybe he does.
Maybe that's what he does.
Sometimes
it's Wojo's
mom. Some
of
these people who defend him on Twitter, so sometimes I wonder if that's him.
Oh jeez, yeah.
Sometimes I wonder. I don't know.
Well, so that's like the what's his name? That was the head coach of this or the GM
Brian
of the
Colangelo.
Yeah, Colangelo. That had like five burner accounts.
Yeah, like he and his wife. Yeah, but who knows? I don't know. But anyway, back to what you were kind of saying about next year, Phil. That's something where I don't know where I want to sit on that as far as calling that like a prove it year. So, like, let me kind of explain, like, kind of where I am on that. Because if next year is your prove-it year, there's going to be a talent drop-off after next year. I don't care what kind of recruits are coming in for 2020, unless they're going to somehow sign, like, 3 All-Americans. There's going to be a drop-off after that. So, like, if you're going to, like, give him a huge extension for, like, far and away his best team, and then just commit to kind of what may be another rebuild, depending on what kind of recruits he's able to bring in. I don't know how excited I am about that, honestly. If I'm going to say it's a prove-it year, what is proving it? Is it regular season success? Is it tournament success? Is it a little bit of both? Like, do we need a Big East championship and a Sweet 16 run? Do we need a second place in the Big East and get to the, you know, and get to the second round? Is that enough? Like, I don't know if I want to set a bar and say, get there, and then we're really excited. Like, I don't know what I want to set that bar at as far if we're going to say next year is, like you call it, a prove-it year. But it is pretty consequential because I think an interesting thing, Phil, is about a month ago, we were all pretty sure that an extension was coming for Wojo. And that's something when we get to our off-season checklist. I'll be curious to see what happens with a Wojo extension, if it happens, what kind of – like how long the extension is. The thing we'll never know is what maybe Marquette was planning to offer a month ago and if it changed at all.
Yeah, well, and you unpack a very interesting dilemma, right? Because, like you said, next year is going to be our best on paper again. I think we can all agree it's going to be our best roster in.
Yeah,
7
assuming
years.
Marcus Howard comes back, it will be far and away Marquette's best team. And even if he leaves, it should still be very strong.
Correct, and so that's credit to Wojo, right? Wojo brought this team together. He's doing the player development. So that's got to count in his favor. But it is interesting because, like you said, unless we go out and sign a bunch of recruits, there's a definite drop off after next season. At least it looks like it. So if you're going to be rebuilding anyway, do you rebuild with Wojo and you know hope he can rebuild faster than he rebuilt the first time, or do you start over anyway because you're not sold on him? The other aspect of it that's interesting is like I don't normally say like I think March Madness is a crapshoot, right? Like you can lose to you can have a very good team, and you know Virginia by all accounts last year was an outstanding team, and they lost to a 16 seed. Had never happened before. It was all sorts of historic, but. Like that stuff happens. That's not a fireable offense per se. But I mean, when we're at next year is going to be year 6. We'll have two. Hopefully, next year will be our third NCAA appearance, and we'll have had. And depending on what happens next year, we'll have had no wins in the NCAA tournament. And as someone on Twitter that was in the Fire Wojo crowd pointed out, and I think it's relevant. Mike Dean coached for 5 years at Marquette, had a better record than Wojo, had one extra NCAA appearance, and had two NCAA wins as of this year. You know, and Wojo's in year 5, right? Next year's year 6. So we fired coaches for performing better than Wojo has.
Yeah, it's a valid point. If that was the bar then, has the bar moved now? And, you know, every indication I get is that the administration loves Wojo. Like, everything about the way he runs a program. And they want this to work so bad. But if the results aren't there, then they may have to make a decision that's going to be very difficult for them. And that's where, you know, I get back to this possible extension. Because who knows if, like, as great as the relationship has been between, again, seemingly between Wojo and the administration, what if they decide they don't want to offer him an extension or maybe offer him something less than maybe what was being talked. Cause whatever was being discussed or talked about with like his agent and the school, I'm sure Wojo had a good idea. Oh, maybe they're going to tack, you know, 3 or 4 years on the end or something like that. And if they come back and they offer something much less than that, or maybe not as much money as they were expecting, maybe that relationship may not be as rosy as it's been, you know? And if that happens, don't be shocked if Wojo looks around. It's like, all right, if you're not going to give me a 5-year extension, I'm going to go see if I can get a 5-year contract somewhere else. And then they play a big game of chicken. That may seem ludicrous, but that could happen if Wojo is expecting a contract extension and he doesn't get it, or he doesn't get exactly what he's looking for. I think in the end, I think Wojo will be Marquette's coach next year, but that's something I'm kind of monitoring in this offseason is what the extension is, and then the parts that we can only speculate about is maybe what the extension could have been, or maybe what was planning to be before the late season collapse, and if it was altered at all. I have altered the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Well, and I mean, just from an optics standpoint, I mean, I think you know, we can take the does he deserve it or not off the table. I think just in the economics and the politics of head coaching these days, you know, he has to have some sort of extension because it gets hard to recruit, you know, especially when he's recruiting 2020 kids and 2021 and 2022 kids that, you know, they look at him and say, well, you don't even have a contract for the time I'm going to be there. You know, it's going to be hard to recruit in those circumstances. So the optics of it say there has to be some form of extension here if you're going to keep him around following next year. But I think we're both agreed that Marquette has to announce that extension real quiet, like with minimal fanfare, right? Because
just a beautiful Friday news dump.
Yeah.
4:45 on Friday. You know, maybe when the tournament games tip off, maybe if one of the games on Friday is coming down to the wire, just go ahead and hit send on that bad boy. Just kind of get that thing out of there.
Yeah, you know, because it's clear that the fan base is and I never assume Twitter is real life because it's pretty much the opposite. But, I mean, there is clearly a segment of the fan base that is fed up with, I guess I'll say, what they perceive as low expectations. And I will say, as the resident optimist, I was the opposite end of them up until the last 3 or 4 weeks here. And again, I think it just comes back to I'm concerned that we are the team that was the last 4 weeks and not the team that was the first 8 weeks. That's the concern I have, is that when we were playing really well, that was smoke and mirrors. You look at things like the KenPom, and Marquette was ranked as one of the luckiest teams, top 10 in luck, for whatever that is, and that sort of thing. That has me concerned that this team is smoke and mirrors, and yes, we'll theoretically be better next year, but, you know, so are players going to improve enough that we're going to improve at or better rate than the rest of the Big East is, that we can be, you know, I mean, I'll say it right now, I think we should be competing for the Big East title, hands down, like an outright Big East title.
Damn right. I mean, that should absolutely be the expectation. Granted, Villanova is bringing in a blockbuster recruiting class, especially by Villanova standards, because Jay Wright doesn't really always get a bunch of All-Americans, but he did this year. And even though they are kind of reloading a little bit, they're going to be young. And Marquette should be able to capitalize, especially if everyone comes back that is scheduled to come back. Marquette should be experienced and talented and deep, more so than they were this year. And so there is no excuse to set the bar at anything other than a Big East championship for next year.
Absolutely. And so that's going to be the thing we're going to have to figure out is will this team live up to that expectation, or is it, you know, and I guess.
Yes, that's the thing that's crazy. If they finish second in the Big East next year, is that a failure? Is that like, let's move on from Wojo kind of failure? Like, I don't know if that sounds right or not.
Yeah, that's why I'm struggling to articulate this even more than usual, just because I can literally see both sides of the coin on this one. And
like it goes back to what I was kind of saying. I don't think Wojo's a terrible coach, but I also don't think he's a great coach.
Right.
So I think what the administration has to say, all right, let's say Wojo, I don't know where we would rank in coaches in America. Let's say, just for the sake of this, he's a top 100 coach in the country. For a program that spends like Marquette spends on basketball, is a top 100 coach good enough? Or do you want to try to get something better than that?
Right. Well, and that's
and can you get somebody better than that?
Well, that's the other shoe there is, let's say they decide to move on from Wojo. At this point, I wouldn't be disappointed or excited. I'd be like, okay, fair. Let's say they do that, but if you're gonna do that, I don't want to see another up-and-coming assistant, right? Like, we've been down that road a bunch. Sometimes it's worked out, sometimes it hasn't. And I'd like to see an established coach, because that's where, if Wojo fails, that's where Wojo will have failed, in that ability to coach the games and manage the situations. And so it all depends on who's out there.
Yeah, it's just, like I said before, he just fails to overachieve. He achieves. He just doesn't overachieve. I think when you overachieve, that's when you get people excited. When you're, you know, predicted to finish fifth in the league and you win it, or you're predicted to be first round out in the NCAA tournament and you go to the Sweet 16. It's the overachieving that really gets people excited and gets you contract extensions and gets people saying, well, oh man, he's a guy who should be one of the highest paid coaches in the country. It's, you know, just meeting expectations and hitting them dead on. That's what people are like, eh, I don't know. It's okay. It's just okay.
Yeah, there's a Chappelle comedy special reference that I will only make lightly in the you're supposed to. he's supposed to do these things.
Dude, something you're supposed to do? That's Chris Rock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Chris Rock. Why did I say Chappelle? Yeah, you're right. It's Chris Rock. Anyway.
Yeah, I knew what you were going with it.
So he's supposed to do these things, and he hasn't. But, yeah, I think we've belabored the Wojo point. But it is – I mean, it's a critical – we're at a critical point, right, where the team has to put up or shut up because, you know, Marquette's got a lot of money invested in this. And who knows what happens in the next couple of years with the Bucks and the stadium situation and all that stuff. This all matters. So Marquette is gambling on Wojo here.
Yeah, and so, just to kind of put a bow on the Wojo discussion, where do I sit going into next year is kind of what I was saying. Marquette has an okay coach, and are we okay with an okay coach going forward? Do we want to extend an okay coach, decent coach? I don't think he's a great coach. I don't think he's a high-level coach. I don't think he's the next coach at Duke. Like, I don't he does a decent job, but sometimes he falls short, and I think there are a lot of coaches in the – across college basketball who I would probably say do better jobs. I would like to see maybe an unbiased person rank the top 50 coaches in the nation. And if they would, I'm curious if they would get to Wojo. Unbiased.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Yeah. Off topic, by the way, I saw Anonymous Eagle tweet that today is the 6-year anniversary of Done Deal.
Oh, geez.
And like 6 years later, who would you rather have, Wojo or Shaka?
Oh, boy. I gotta say Wojo.
Is that tough?
Yeah, it's real tough.
Yeah, the tough thing for me there is Wojo has done more at Marquette than Shaka has done at Texas, and the shine is definitely worn off on Shaka from his VCU days. But he's also had some tough luck at Texas with injuries, and you know Andrew Jones had cancer. He's had some really tough luck there, and I still don't think Shaka's a bad coach, but. The results are what they are. They were a 500 team this year. So, I don't know. I think Marquette might be in better shape. I think that was kind of my general point asking the question. I think Marquette came out of Done Deal maybe in the better spot.
Yeah, I
think it's still tough to judge Shaka, though. But I want to see maybe where Shaka is in 2 or 3 years. That thing just came across my mind.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's a good milestone. But again, either way, at this point, you would say Shaka's an okay – like there's nothing that says Shaka's more than an okay coach, and there's nothing that says Wojo's more than an okay coach. And again, Marquette's investing a lot. Is okay?
Yeah. And that's something over the next year he needs to show he's great.
Yep.
And I don't know how many coaches really hit their stride in year 6. I don't know.
Yeah, really break, really come into their own 6 years after starting.
Yeah, year 6, that's when really breaking through. Really, you know, 5 years of not sure, and then all of a sudden, Hall of Fame. We'll see. You know, next thing I want to do, Phil, is kind of go through, because, you know, this is our last weekly. For those of you who have been listening to the pod for a long time, you would know this, but for those of you who are relatively new, so we're basically a weekly podcast throughout the season, and then we kind of dial it back to a maybe monthly or whenever we feel like it podcast in the summer. Whenever there's breaking news, like in the past, if there's been a transfer or an addition or a recruit sign or a coaching move, scheduling announcements, that's when we kind of pop in and say, hey, how's it going? Here's what's up with Marquette basketball, and then we kind of tune out. But there's some things I think we're going to be keeping an eye on over the next really just a couple weeks. We might know a few things, but as we get into the summer, some things to keep an eye on in as far as Marquette basketball and how it's going to shape up for 2019-2020. And the first thing I want to talk about is the roster and how it's going to shape up. And the number one question on people's minds, I think, is Marcus Howard's future. I think a lot of people are under the assumption that he will at least declare for the draft without an agent and see where he stands, and then he will make a decision on whether he is going to come back for his senior season, or if he has decided he is ready to be a pro, and whether that means in the NBA or just take a shot, even if it means playing in the G League first, or whether he wants to be like Vanderbilt and play in, I don't know, Israel or Lithuania or wherever Vanderbilt ended up playing after he declared for the draft early. Where do you think Marcus Howard is going to be next year, Phil?
I think Marcus declares without an agent. And quite frankly, if there are any, you know, if there are at least enough reliable projections that have him projected in the first round, he should go get the money. Like,
he
you know,
be.
He won't be. I don't think so either. You know, so I'm just prefacing, you know,
yeah,
my next statement
I get
with,
what you're saying.
Yeah, he's got to go if there's a first round. I think he's back at Marquette next year. I think, and normally I'm loath to say such things in, you know, what I'm about to say, but it seems like he's, you know, he's about the college experience. He's about his teammates. You know, he seems like he's got more than just making money playing basketball as a priority in his head, you know, with the volunteer work and his faith and stuff like that. So I think he tests the waters and he should get some feedback, but I think he's ultimately back at Marquette next year. If he goes, I as long as it's good for him, I wouldn't be upset or surprised, but I if I'm projecting, I think he's back.
Yeah. The interesting thing for me it would be if, like, he's not going to get a first-round guarantee, but what if he got a second-round guarantee? And by that, like, some team said, look, we're not going to take you in the first round, but if you're there in the second, we're going to take you and we'll give you an NBA deal. Like, I think that would be intriguing to him, that if some team was willing to say, look, we're not only going to take you in the second round, but we'll give you a guaranteed contract. Like, it's not mandatory that NBA teams give guaranteed contracts to second-rounders, but some of them do. They can't, especially if, you know, you get a guy you really like – you know, you can give him a guaranteed contract if you want to. And if some team tells Marcus Howard that's what we're going to do, then I think that would be highly intriguing to him, and he may be willing to give it a shot. That being said, when I have seen Marcus Howard against some high-level guards in college basketball, I have just been so concerned and thought, man, the NBA is just such a tough league to make, and I'm just not sure there's a spot for him. I would love to see him make it in the NBA, whether it's this year or next year. I'm just not sure it's coming. I have questions about, obviously, his size as kind of an undersized two guard. I have his ball handling, some of his late-game decision-making. It just, that league is so tough, man. We've seen some very good players at Marquette and all of college basketball that have been so good in college, just can't stick in the league. Jerome McNeil, Vander Blue, Darius Johnson Odom. These guys were good players in college. You can go all throughout college basketball and find hundreds of examples. It's a tough league to make, a tough league to stick. And like, if Marcus is looking at a possibility of spending next year in the G League or overseas, would that be all that interesting to him? Would he, again, like Vanderbilt, is he a guy who is done with the college experience and wants to go get paid? I'm not sure that's the case, but I don't know him that well. I've never actually met Marcus Howard. So I don't know where his head's at. We're going to find out probably in the next few weeks here. I would imagine he would have some kind of announcement of whether he's entering without an agent, entering with an agent, maybe that would surprise a lot of people, or if he's just saying, look, I'm not even going to do it, I'm coming back. Also, wouldn't be surprised if Sam Hauser wants to go through it without an agent as well, because he's a guy I think NBA scouts are maybe a little more intrigued by because of his size and shooting ability. Like, long-term, he may actually hang around the NBA longer than Marcus. That wouldn't surprise me, honestly. But I would be surprised if both Sam and Marcus test the waters, as the expression goes, but I'm kind of with you. My gut says they're both going to be back. I'm just really not sure about Marcus because I'm not sure what he wants right now and like where he views himself as an NBA player. The interesting thing is, if he comes back, he's only 30 points behind Jerome McNeil. He finished with 1,955 points, so exactly 30 points behind Jarrell for number one all time at Marquette.
Yeah, I think your analysis is spot on. I think I had forgotten about Sam, but yeah, I think both Sam and Marcus test the waters, get some free guidance, see where they're at, and then ultimately probably come back and then try and put it all in on this team this next season to go do something meaningful. Because I mean, quite frankly, from a Marcus legacy, yeah, not only would he get the all-time scoring record, but like if he can lead or at least help the team have some great success, you know, win a conference title, which Marquette has never won one in the Big East. Granted, they've only been in since 2004.
Remember, they tied.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They tied. Yeah, that's
2012.
Right.
Yeah.
2012.
Yeah, 2013. Right. 2013, they tied.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they've never won it outright, and they have never won it since the new Big East.
Right, correct. So, I mean, there's some legacy stuff there from you know, that Marcus might be considering. So it's going to be interesting. That's clearly, you know, these topics we're going through here are essentially what's going to raise the podcast, the quote unquote pod signal, or bat signal, yeah, to get us on. And, you know, Marcus, I don't know that Marcus entering or Sam entering the draft without an agent would raise the signal. If either one of them gets an agent or declares and stays, that's definitely something to talk about for sure.
Yeah, that would be something definitely to watch. And by the way, not to get too far off topic on this, but this is just kind of another example of why NCAA athletes should be able to capitalize on their name and likeness and be able to sign sponsorships and get money that way. Marcus Howard will never be a bigger star than he is right now. That I'm pretty sure of. Even if he does make it in the NBA and sticks around, more people will know who Marcus Howard is this year and next year if he comes back than him as a professional. That I'm pretty sure about. So that's a bummer. But it would be awesome if guys like him could capitalize on that and get money. Again, don't mean to get off topic, but something to kick around.
No, it's legit. How much money could Marcus have made off his Marquette career over
exactly.
and above?
He could make a ton. Like, yeah. I'm sure, like, not even like nationally, but like, you know, if car dealerships and law firms in Milwaukee want to put his face on a billboard, he could, you know, get some coin. He could market, you know, they could sell Marcus Howard jerseys at the Golden Eagle and give him a cut of it. He should be able to make money off that. That's a shame.
But, well, and the other thing I just want to, before we move off it, think about how much that would help kids stay in college, right? Like,
exactly.
If I could make a million, I'm making a number up. If I can go to college and I'll stay an extra year making $1 million off my likeness while playing and then wait a year until I graduate to go to the NBA to give it a shot, like, isn't that what the NCAA is about? Is like giving kids opportunity to get an
education?
According
to that commercial they keep running over and over again on my television, it is.
No kidding. Talk about hypocrisy. But we're not the NCAA sucks podcast.
Sometimes we are, but yes, definitely. Yeah, like you said, especially for these kids who, you know, I don't think Marcus is in this boat necessarily, but like some of these kids come from tough homes and like where mom and dad have trouble paying the light bill every week. And for them to make a little money and be able to send it home to mom and dad and not feel like they have to go pro just to pay some bills, that'd be nice. But again, not to get too off topic on the NCAA. Let's talk about another off-season storyline for Marquette to watch. Other roster turnover other than NBA decisions. Obviously, you know Matt Helton, Joseph Chartouni, they are graduating, so they're done. Dexter Ocano, he's coming in. The thing to watch is Samir Torrance. He's a 2020 kid. He is committed with the option to reclassify to 2019. My gut with him, Phil, just is going to depend on Marcus's decision. Like if Marcus leaves yep. or some other guard on the roster leaves, I think he would reclassify and be very much neat. Like even if that's not his first choice, I think the coaching staff would say, hey man, we need you and like get here now. However, if everyone on the roster returns, maybe Samir just stays in his high school class for 2020 and shows up in the 2020-2021 season when he could potentially get a lot more minutes as a freshman.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's an 100% tied to Marcus. Because, again, we got Greg Elliott coming back and some other players.
Yeah, McEwen's going to be eligible. So, yeah, it could be a crowded backcourt.
We suddenly go from a one- or two-player backcourt to a four- or five-player backcourt. Yeah. So if Marcus goes, I think Torrance comes. If Marcus doesn't, I think he stays 2020. You know, assuming he stays with his commitment, stays 2020, and we'll be here after Marcus leaves.
Yeah. And I'll just throw this out there because I know some people on the Twitter sphere are curious about it. Don't hold your breath on Nico Mannion. I know some people, you know, with the trouble at Arizona and the potential that Sean Miller could be fired or sanctioned to come under the program, my gut just tells me that dude wants to be a Wildcat. And even if Miller gets fired, they have the number one recruiting class and they would still be able to hire a good coach. And I think he would stick. But I can't say that's 100% sure, but all I'm saying is if you have your hopes high on Nico Mannion flipping, like backing out of his letter of intent, don't hold your breath on that one. I don't have a good feeling on that one. So,
well, do we even know if Marquette was number two for Nico?
I mean, for what it's worth, he did cut his list to two before he committed.
Oh, did he? Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
It was four. It was Marquette, Arizona, Duke, and Villanova, and then he cut it to just Arizona and Marquette, and we're all like, holy crap. But then he canceled his Marquette visit, and that was it. So, but that doesn't mean he can't, you know, back out of Arizona and commit to USC or something, you know, last
right,
minute.
Right.
So,
Well, and I mean, will if Nico Mannion wants to come to Marquette, I think we can find some roster space.
Yes.
Will occur to clear some space, but you know.
Yeah, and that's the other thing to bring up is not that I want to either pick out names or anything, but there's also the possibility that somebody could transfer. Transfers happen in college basketball. Kids maybe you think are going to be back, they decide they want to go somewhere else. So just something to keep an eye on. And those things tend to happen, honestly, in the first week or two after the season. That's kind of when the team has their team meetings, the little one-on-ones where coaches and players meet, just evaluate their status in the program, and that would be an ideal time for a player to say, "Coach, I'd really like to be somewhere else," or even for a chance for a coach to say, "Son, I think you should look at other opportunities." So if there is anyone leaving the program, I would look for that news sometime in the next week or two.
Yep. So that would, again, put up and we're not going to call out names. I mean, I think everyone can look at the roster and say, all right, these are candidates.
Yeah, because I think they suggest that we want a kid to leave, and I don't want anybody to leave.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, so, but if such things happens, that's a pod signal.
By the way, speaking of transfers, though, do you know who's on the transfer market right now as a grad transfer?
I do not.
Hanif Cheatham.
Oh, that's right. He is. Yeah, he wrapped up.
I'm not saying that he would come back, but he's a name out there.
Didn't he go down to Florida because of, I would hopefully, in a positive way, whatever family situation was going on that had him
transferring
down to Florida. Yeah,
whatever thing drew him to Florida. The thing is, I don't know, maybe it's over, maybe it's not. Maybe he's looking to transfer to another school in Florida, but he has announced that he will leave. He got an extra year of eligibility that's been approved, and he is going to be a grad transfer, and so he'll play somewhere immediately next year. So wherever he ends up, good luck to him. I don't think it's going to be Marquette, because I don't know, especially with the current roster composition, I don't know if that would be a good fit for anybody, but yeah, we'll see.
Time will tell.
One other thing to watch over the offseason is coaching staff, not necessarily Wojo, but it seems like Stan Johnson and Brent Nelson, their names have been up for head coaching jobs. And it's so tough to hold on to your assistants forever. So it would not surprise me if one or both leave Marquette this offseason. If they get a head coaching job, good for them. You know, they've earned it, so especially Stan Johnson. He really kicks ass on the recruiting trail. He's done a really great job. So it would certainly be understandable if some school wants to hire either one of those guys. So Wojo may need to replenish his staff. He's been pretty fortunate to hold on to Stan and Nelson as long as he has. But it just feels like it's just a matter of time before somebody hires one of those guys away.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I feel safe saying at least one of them is gone after this season. I'd be a little surprised by both, but, you know, especially after we just got done talking about how just okay Wojo has been. If I had to guess, I think Stan Johnson's probably, you know, finding a gig somewhere. You know, he's got ties to Arizona. I doubt he would get – he's not big enough name to get the Arizona job, I don't think.
No,
but,
no, no.
But who knows?
One job that I thought would have been great for him, but I don't think it's going to happen now, if Eric Musselman left Nevada.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nevada's looking for a coach. But, you know, smaller schools out there in California would probably be – or California, Nevada, Arizona, that general area – they'd be probably wise to look at Stan Johnson. So if he gets a head job, good for him. But if he's back in Marquette, great for us, because he's, like I said, he's awesome on the recruiting trail.
Absolutely.
Last thing I will just touch on is scheduling notes. We'll see what kind of things we learn about Marquette's schedule for next season. The only things we do know right now, at Kansas State, at Wisconsin, those are for sure. And then the Advocare Invitational, Marquette is going to play in an 8-team tournament along with USC, who may have a new head coach, Texas A&M, who will have a new head coach, perhaps a familiar face, Maryland was a tournament team this year, Davidson, Temple, who will have a new head coach, we already know that's Aaron McKee, and then Harvard and Fairfield. So that is the field next year. Very possible that Marquette could meet up with Buzz Williams at Texas A&M next year if that ends up happening. So that's, we do know that for next year. And there's a possibility.
Buzz to Texas A&M, Stan Johnson to Virginia Tech?
I don't know what Virginia Tech would do. Who knows? Maybe if USC has to fire Andy Enfield, maybe Stan Johnson could end up at USC. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. Actually, it's probably Mick Cronin to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that would actually make a lot of sense. That'd be hilarious. All right, so I think we've talked enough Marquette basketball, Phil. Do we want to tell people about the big surprise we or the big project we're going to be working on over the course?
Yeah, let's. It's certainly not this Marquette offseason. Let's give them something else to look forward to.
Yeah, so Phil just brought it up on Twitter, and it just became a kind of a discussion among a few people. So we thought it would be a fun thing to kind of touch in on over the spring and summer when we're doing our next podcast. We're going to do a bracket of the best sports movies ever. Many others have done this on blogs and things. We decided we wanted to do our own. We've seen 16 brackets, 16 movie brackets, 32 movie brackets. We've expanded it. We're going to do 68. So we're going to do the whole shebang. We're going to do even do play-in games and everything. We've kind of got it loosely ranked. We used a couple different, I guess you'd call them metrics. Like we used
we created a net ranking for sports.
Yeah, it's our own net, our own RPI. So we used like IMDb ratings. We used Rotten Tomatoes. We used some other things. We're not going to like go through the entire list because we haven't really finalized our seed list, Phil. But anything jumping out at you early on of some of the movies we've kind of got on the docket here?
Well, I mean, we've got like 37 Rocky movies.
We're going to have to pare that down. There's definitely going to be some of the things in the Rocky franchise that are not going to make the cut.
Can't have them all. And we're going to have to adopt rules like the Big Ten where we have to seed them away from each other so there's no first-round matchups and second-round matchups and stuff like that. And we're also – I was surprised there's at least a half a dozen movies that they were remakes of later. There are no remakes that have made the list. So the Bad News Bears is on the list.
Second version of The Longest Yard. We're not going to do that.
Right. So yeah, it's an interesting list. We gotta tweak it around a little bit. You know, some of these movies, I think it's going to be this list. You could run, you know, you could have the same 68 every time and you could run it through a dozen different people and you're going to get a different result because, you know, like I'll be honest, I'm not a huge boxing movie fan, but
yeah, like so many of the highest rated movies are boxing movies, yeah. Including Raging Bull, which won an Oscar.
Right. Right. I mean, just in the top eight as we have it right now, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 boxing movies, which is crazy. But
the drama of boxing just plays well to movies.
Yeah. Well, and they're just made a lot of them, I guess. So, but yeah, it's going to be interesting. The just again, a little tease. I think it's the much like the committee usually, the last, you know, 10 or so are going to be where we're tweaking right now. But the four number ones as they currently stand in our metric are and we're going in reverse order. So Creed is the worst one seed.
That seems really high for Creed, but go on.
It does. But people liked it apparently.
They did.
The Blind Side, Million Dollar Baby, and then the number one overall per our metric, which was made up today arbitrarily on a spreadsheet, is Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans is solid. I actually did a movie, sports movie bracket when I was working in Tulsa. We had fans vote on it. And Remember the Titans actually ended up winning. But like you said, you could do this thing with like 100 times with 100 different groups of people, and you probably have like 50 different winners just because, you know, people have their tastes and things, and you just get different age groups voting, and some things don't age as well as others.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. You're going to end up with movies that, like, prime example, Jerry Maguire. Is it actually a sports movie? And does it advance because it may or may not be a sports movie?
Yeah, well, the other thing we struggled with was including documentaries.
Yep.
Because I think documentaries have a bit of an advantage because they're just so raw and emotional and real. But especially with this audience, Hoop Dreams is probably going to do really, really well. May win the whole damn thing. But we kind of limited it to movies that were released in theaters, so we're not going to include all the 30 for 30s and all that because that's just getting way too deep into it. But Hoop Dreams is definitely going to be – Hoop Dreams is going to have a strong seed, and I think it can go really far.
Yeah, well, that's one of the interesting things about the metrics. So we used IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, but then I also did the global box office, and it's the domestic box office adjusted for 2019. So as an example, Hoop Dreams in the first two metrics, you know, pegs out near the top, but it really didn't make a bunch of money in the theater. And you can argue, well, that's not a great metric, but whatever, it differentiates, right? So yeah. So that's kind of one of the metrics we used is global box office. So that kind of – the hope there is that suppresses that documentary thing a little bit and doesn't overseed them. But we'll see. I don't know. People will probably hate us. The goal is definitely –
Oh, absolutely.
we're going to start more farts on Twitter than Wojo.
Yeah, when you see that's really our goal, is to kind of take the heat off Wojo in the spring. That's what we're going to do, because people are going to get pissed about our movie breaks. When they see some of the movies that are like on the 14, 15, 16 line, like, how is that low? Well, it's because it's not that good. That's why.
Right. But, because it's our bracket, and we didn't like
it. Yeah, it's because it's our bracket. But the thing is, there are some good movies that are going to be like very low seeds, like movies that I like. Not that I say they're necessarily great movies, but if it's on television, like, for example, I'm not going to tell you what seed it is, but Varsity Blues is pretty low on this thing. I really like Varsity Blues. I got a kick out of it. It's funny. It's rewatchable. I think that could go a few rounds. You got some other movies down there at the bottom that are really on the bubble as we kind of sort this thing out, like Mighty Ducks, and what are some other ones that are down here that are watchable? You know what? I've never seen that one.
Oh, well, and then you got the heartstring. Like, you've got Rookie of the Year, right? Rookie of the Year is at the bottom of the list, you know. But that's a kid that you and I were, you know, preteens when that movie came out. So it holds.
Yeah, like
place.
When we were kids, that was an awesome movie. It doesn't age well. So I don't know if I have a problem. Tin Cup is a movie a lot of people love, but that's going to be way down there in the rankings. But when you really start to like sort all these things out, look at how many freaking sports movies there have been. There's some real quality movies towards the bottom. I love a good sports movie. A lot of these movies I really like. I haven't seen all of them. I mean, gosh, there's a lot of movies here. So there are some I've actually never heard of. But I'm going to try to catch up and maybe catch some of the ones that I haven't seen. But I think you guys are going to enjoy this. What I would ask, though, before we like unveil the whole bracket, maybe hit us up with, like, on Twitter, your personal top five. Just want to make sure we didn't miss something, right? Like, yeah. I'm not going to like get into a debate over like whether Rocky V or Air Bud should be the 16th seed, because those movies aren't going to win this thing. But I just want to make sure we've got everything. I feel pretty good that we've got just about every relevant sports movie in here. But if you had a personal top five, hit us up with those that, like, these movies absolutely have to be in there or it's a total abomination.
Right. Well, I want to say that one of the reasons for this is Katie Nolan on her podcast did a 16 movie sports movie bracket. It wasn't enough. And two, and again, this is my personal – I am going to make it my mission that Rudy loses in the first round because I hate Notre Dame. Having said that, Rudy is a top 16 team or top 16 sports movie of all time, and it was not even in her bracket. So that kind of got me fired up to say, we got to do this. So
and
I don't
also say it had zero basketball movies?
Yeah, and also had zero basketball movies. Correct.
I mean, come on. Yeah. Not even Hoosiers?
Right. So I got a little upset about that. So that's partially why we're doing this.
Basically,
so
you listened to Katie Nolan's podcast and you said, we can do this better. That's basically how this started.
There is nothing else I can do better than Katie Nolan except doing a sports movie, you know, bracket.
Yeah, fair enough. I think this bracket will actually be solid. All right, so here's my personal top five, Phil. Like, the five that absolutely have to be in it for me. These are just movies that I love, like sports movies that I love. One is Rocky, of course. Rocky's got to be in there. A League of Their Own is fantastic. Sandlot is going to be in there because that's one of my all-time favorites. Yes, I like Rudy. Hate me if you want. And I, because this is a Marquette podcast, I fully know that Rudy's probably going out in the first round. Rudy's a great movie. It has to be in there. And finally, Hoosiers. Those are my five sports movies that absolutely have to be in this thing.
Okay, so I've got five as well. One, and this will kind of tip in the cap. This will be one that's a tough one to get in. Victory is absolutely a top five movie for me. I know a lot of people don't know it, but you know.
Yeah, I've never even seen it, but you definitely stand for it. So I may have to catch this.
Sylvester Stallone as a goalkeeper in a World War II prisoner movie. I'm in. Hard in. Varsity Blues, I've got a ride for. A League of Their Own is 100% 100% in for me. I'm gonna say Caddyshack it is not only a top five sports movie for me, it's probably one of my top five. I mean, for God's sakes, I'm in a golf outing weekend that we named The Bowl of Soup because it's nothing but Caddyshack quotes the whole time. And then I actually, out of the Rockyverse, I'm going to go with Rocky IV. That's a top five sports movie for me. I much prefer Rocky IV to any of the other Rockies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just defeating the Russians, man.
Yeah, I get it. I think Rocky IV is just a little bit, maybe a little too much, like political. Like, if I can do it, or if we can change,
if I can change and he can change, you can change. Oh, we can God, all change.
That was a bit much for me. I was definitely surprised in your like little metrics that how high Creed came. I like Creed. Creed is damn good. I really liked it, but I do think it was basically taking the premise of Rocky and just altering it a bit to make it Creed. Like everything about Creed is very similar to Rocky. Kind of like how the Star Wars A New Hope or the Star Wars Force Awakens was pretty much just a rehashing of A New Hope.
Yep.
That's kind of how I felt about Creed and Rocky. It's kind of the same thing.
Well, listen, but, yeah, millennials just ruin everything. That's the story.
No, I get it. So anyway, hit us up with some of your top five locks for you. Just hit us up on Twitter, a sports movie that has to be in it or you're just going to totally dismiss the whole thing. Again, I don't need you, you know, standing for – what are some of the movies at the bottom here? Some movies that
– Air Bud.
On the – Yeah, like Air Bud, Little Big League, Major League 2,
Rocky 5.
Kicking and Screaming is not getting in. I will die on that hill.
Yes.
That is not getting in. But yeah, movies like that, don't need to hear it. Those have no chance. But movies that you absolutely love, rewatchable movies, movies that get you – like movies that make you cry. Sports. You can admit that if a sports movie makes you cry – it's a damn good movie, and it should be in this thing. So hit us up with those. Again, we're going to – I don't know if we'll be able to get it all in one podcast because we're talking like 63 matchups. Maybe we might spread it out. Like when we do our first check-in, we'll go through the first round, let you guys give us your feedback, and then we'll kind of go through the second round. Maybe by the end of the summer, we'll have a sports movie champion. How's that sound?
I think that's good. Besides hashtag content, we gotta keep them coming.
Yeah, we gotta
back,
talk
right?
about something. Hopefully, there's not so much drama in Marquette this offseason, like that totally wipes this out. Like if there's like a gigantic shift in the roster and coaching staff that just changes everything. Hopefully, there's not that much drama. Really, I hope that it's relatively quiet offseason for Marquette basketball. We can really get excited about next year, but this will just be something to talk about. So I hope we have fun with it.
And we'll be rolling out. So we're going to give some time to get your guys' feedback on. So again, we don't screw it up, but get your feedback and then we'll roll the bracket out and get some information out there so people can kind of take a look and digest. And again, we're all about taking the heat off of Wojo. So you can turn your hate tweets to us and our bracket. And then sometime probably I'm guessing in April, we'll kind of do a check-in on Marquette and take off with the bracket.
How is Little Giants not in this thing?
My God.
Because it Little sucks. That's why.
In the Katie Nolan bracket, Little Giants, I think, made the final matchups.
That invalidates the whole thing.
Right. Correct. It was a travesty and mockery. It was a travesty and a shame and a mockery.
All right, I think we've been podcasting long enough, Phil. You feel like we've gotten everything off our chest related to not only sports movies but Marquette basketball this season?
I think close. I think I do want to close out with a one thing that has made this March Madness, especially with the disaster that was Marquette, so fun is the capture pool we were participating in. New pool.
Yeah, shout out to Marquette. Is that a new thing? Did they invent this? Or
I don't know if they invented it, but it's I've never heard of it before now. So
I love it. Like I'm definitely want to like do it every year now. So if you haven't heard of it, basically it's every game against the spread. Everybody's assigned a team. If your team wins, you move on. If your team covers but loses, you steal the team that beat you and move on. And then it's bottom line. It's the whole tournament against the spread. See who wins at the end. It was kind of cool. It's kind of been a fun thing. So,
yeah, well,
that
and
has
it gives
been a lot of fun.
It's great because it gives like in a 16-1. I mean, obviously Virginia lost last year, but you know if the spread's 30 in a 16-1 game, you can capture that one seed if you just don't lose by more than 29.
Yeah, that's
points.
The thing I love about it because like if you just drew teams straight up, and you know you pulled Iona, where you're like, well, the hell with this, I got no chance of winning, but if you know if it's about the spread, you've always got a chance. And so that makes the whole thing interesting. It's pretty
and,
fun.
And we've had a little side chat going on. So a shout out to MUBB Nation for putting it together. And we've had quite the side chat with regard to the capture pool. So it's made it really entertaining. I highly recommend it for the future. So
yeah,
shout out to
I definitely am going to have to do a capture pool every year now because that's been fun.
Yeah, for sure.
As always, folks, we appreciate you checking in with us on Scrambled Eggs. And again, like I said at the beginning of the pod, not just this show, but all show, all season long. And hope you stay with us through the off season as we track the goings on of Marquette basketball, who's coming, who's going, and also the most important, what is the best sports movie of all time. Appreciate you checking in with us on that. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. Post your thoughts on the podcast. If you don't have Twitter and you want to give us your top five sports movies, post them on into the comments section on cracksidewalks.com. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. And also don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. So when the sports movie bracket comes out later this spring, you will not miss it. You will have it downloaded straight to your phone wherever you get your podcasts. Final thoughts, Phil, before we get out of here?
I'm ready for the off season. Let's cleanse the palate with some sports movies and move on.
I'm all for it. Thanks again, everybody. Seashells and balloons.